What is it?
Yeah, that's what we're doing for the lecture part. What are we doing for the laboratory part? Yeah, we're gonna, well, once we have our plates, which are being delivered, then we'll be able to count those. So it's pretty light on the lab day today. We don't start a new procedure, but we finish the previous one. Therefore, what does that mean?
If we hurry up, we'll leave.
Exactly. The assignment's going to be due for that one on the next meeting. What was your choice?
If we hurry up, we can leave.
Well, it definitely shouldn't take the whole time today. But it does take me a little bit of time to explain the metric system to Americans, because America, shamefully, is one of only three countries in the world that doesn't use the metric system. I was hoping someone would ask what the other two are. Myanmar, and, Myanmar used to be called Burma, right? And the other one is Liberia, which is in Africa. And then there's the United States. Those are the three stubborn countries, basically. Before we actually get to the metric system, though, I want to talk about quantities and units. And those aren't the same thing. Anyone have any idea what the difference is between a quantity and a unit? Yes, exactly. A unit is something that's used to measure something else, and that something else that you measure in units is the quantity itself. So quantity is simply something that can be measured. There's all kinds of quantities in the world. But for any given quantity, there's all kinds of different ways in which you can measure that quantity, according to different systems, right? Those are the units. So, an example of a quantity, for instance, is distance, familiar quantity. Distance between two points. That is the quantity itself. That's what you're measuring. But you can measure that all kinds of different ways. You can measure it in rods, cubits, furlongs, feet, meters, all of those are examples of units. All right? Now, there's also a distinction to be made between fundamental and derived, and both of those words can be used to describe either quantities or units. So there are fundamental units, derived units, that correspond to fundamental quantities and derived quantities. Okay, but what does fundamental mean?
Basic.
Basic, right, which means it's not based on anything else. It is a basis. And so, this is kind of analogous in chemistry to elements. Elements versus compounds. What's the difference between elements and compounds?
An element is only one type of atom.
Right. When you make a compound, what you're doing is combining two or more different kinds of elements to make that stuff. So compounds don't occur on the periodic table. This is just the pure substances, the elements. You can combine two or more of those in different ways, though, to make all kinds, millions of different compounds. Well, fundamental quantities are things that you can measure that don't depend on anything else. They're not made up of other quantities. They stand on their own. Whereas derived quantities are actually combinations of other quantities. The only way that analogy breaks down is that a derived quantity doesn't have to be made out of different quantities. It can be made out of more than one of the same quantity even. So really I should have used atoms and molecules, right? Because an oxygen molecule is still an element, but it's made up of multiple atoms. So maybe I should have used that as the analogy. But anyway, here are some fundamental quantities. These don't depend on anything else. These quantities aren't made up of anything else. They are their own quantities. Distance, pretty familiar with distance. Time, you're familiar with. Time isn't made up of distance and other stuff, for instance. Mass is fundamental. And what is mass?
Amount of matter and object contains.
Yeah, it's the amount of matter. And so the amount of matter that something contains depends on how many atoms are in that batch of stuff you're measuring, and what kind of atoms also, because what's different about the different kinds of atoms? Heavier or more massive because of what?
Number of protons,
electrons, and neutrons. So that's what differs about the different atoms. They have different numbers of subatomic particles. Well, each of those subatomic particles has mass. It's made of stuff. So the more of them you have, the more massive the atom is, and the more atoms you have, the more massive the sample of substance you have is. All right? By the way, we should have been along the way mentioning some units for these things. So let's go back to the top. There's all kinds of systems. There's not just two competing systems in the world. But there's two major systems, and well, there's one major system, and then there's our system that we foolishly continue to use, right? The English system or the imperial system, whatever you want to call it. That's the one that you grew up with, but really you should be taught early to become familiar with the metric system because it's so much easier. Unfortunately, though, we're a little slow in getting this going because I think it was fourth or fifth grade. This is mid-70s when I was taught the metric system first time, and they said, now you need to know this. You need to learn this because in a couple years, that's all we're going to be using. Well, that didn't come true in the 70s, 80s, 90s, or even now. Except for scientists. Even in America, scientists and the other two countries that still use the English system, scientists in all countries use the metric system because it makes so much more sense. But anyway, in distance, what do you measure distance in the English system?
Feet, yards.
Yeah, there's all kinds of units, and this is one of the things that's wrong with the system. All kinds of different units just for distance. You have inches, feet, yards, miles, and so on. And they're not, you have to memorize different conversion factors for each of these things. The metric system is much simpler because it's based on powers of 10. It's a decimal system, in other words. So you don't have to remember that there's 12 inches in a foot and 3 feet in a yard and 1,760 yards in a mile or 5,280 feet in a mile. You don't have to bother with those numbers that are harder to memorize than just powers of 10. Okay? So those are units of distance. What about the metric system? What do we have as units of distance? The
meter.
The meter, which is what the metric system is named for. Meter means measure, actually. But when we think of measure, usually the first thing that comes to mind is actually measuring distance because of the way we are. Okay, so what about time? Time is the only one of these quantities that we use the same units for in both systems. So we have seconds, hours, minutes in both English and metric system. Also, time is the only metric units, or the only metric quantity, I should say, for which the units are not decimal. So in other words, we don't say that the minute is the base unit of time in the metric system, and then a second is a hundredth of a minute. A second is still a 60th of a minute. An hour is still 60 minutes. It's not based on 10, but everything else in the metric system is. Okay. Now, mass what's in this system that you've grown up with, you've lived with for 20 years or so, what do you measure mass in? What are the units?
Pounds,
tons. No, those are weight. Grams is metric. So you don't even know your own system.
Ounces
is weight. Weight and mass are not the same thing. All right? Mass is just what we said it is. It's the amount of matter that's in an object. Weight is a force. Weight is an example of force. There's all kinds of forces, but weight is one force. It's the force that an object has based on its gravity. It's the force of attraction between it and some other object that has mass. So when we talk about our weight, that's the force that we apply to the earth, because we and the earth are attracting each other because we both have mass. So mass and weight are related, because the amount of weight, your force that you apply, depends on how massive you are. The more mass you have, the more weight you exert. So they're related, but they're not the same thing. Notice that when you remove the two objects from each other to a great enough distance, basically when you leave the earth in this case, you're still made out of exactly the same amount of stuff. So your mass is exactly the same when you go out in space. But you no longer have weight, because you don't have the earth to interact with. So you become weightless in space, but not non-massive. You're still just as massive in space, just don't have any weight. That's the difference. So the English system of the English unit of mass is the slug, which probably most of you haven't learned yet, and there's no reason to learn it because no one uses the thing anymore. Engineers, for instance, used to use slugs to measure mass in the English system until we realized this is a foolish system, and now it's all metric. So the metric unit of mass is the gram. But keep in mind that grams are mass, not weight, which can get confusing, because, you know, when you step on a bathroom scale, for instance, what are you directly measuring?
Weight.
Exactly. You're measuring how much force you are pressing down on the top of that scale with, which is your weight. Your weight is a force. Right? So the greater the force, the more the spring is compressed in the scale, and the more the needle moves on the scale, assuming it's an analog scale. And so what do we have as the units on the numbers? If this is a scale made for the United States, the big numbers at the top have what units?
Pounds.
Pounds, which is correct, because pounds are units of force, right? And therefore weight. But if it's ones made recently, by which I mean the last 50 years or so, then it will also have a row of smaller numbers below that, right? Which have what units?
Kilograms,
which is wrong, right? Kilograms are not weight. Kilograms are mass. If it were to be consistent, meaning you have two different systems, but you use quantities for the same. I mean, you use units for the same quantity. In other words, if it's English units of weight on the top and metric units of weight on the bottom, then it shouldn't be kilograms on the bottom. What should it be? Anyone know? In other words, what is the metric unit of weight, or force, which is even more general. It's the Newton. Named after Newton himself, of course, which told us that force equals mass times acceleration, F equals ma. By the way, since force equals mass times acceleration, what kind of quantities does that make force? Right, a derived quantity. It's not its own quantity, it's a quantity that's made up of some sort of combination of other quantities. In fact, acceleration is itself derived, right? Because acceleration is distance per time, or meters per second squared, and mass is fundamental. But anyway, the whole mixture of them is force, which makes force an example of a derived quantity. And therefore, any units that you use to measure force are themselves derived. So the Newton is a derived unit, and so is the pound. But the slug, which is a unit of mass, is a fundamental unit, because mass is a fundamental quantity. Same for grams. Okay. Temperature. Yeah.
If pound and kilogram aren't the same thing, why is there a conversion?
Oh, yeah. I actually meant to say this, so I'm glad you stopped me. Technically speaking, it's incorrect to say that however many pounds equals however many kilograms, even though they're like that on the scale of a bathroom scale. And as a matter of fact, even on a scientific balance like we have in here, notice what it reads out in, grams, which is mass, not force. But the reason that it's doing that is because whoever made the scale is assuming that you're going to use this thing on Earth. And usually it's more convenient to know what the mass is than to know what the weight is. Right? You usually, scientifically especially, care about the mass rather than the weight. So the assumption is, if I can assume that they're putting this object onto this scale on Earth, on the surface of the Earth somewhere, then I can measure the force directly and then mathematically figure out what the mass would have to be based on the gravitational constant for Earth, 1g, which has a value to it, 9.8 meters per second squared in the metric system, for instance. So it just calculates what the grams need to be based on F equals ma, right? A, in this case, acceleration would be the acceleration due to gravity, so we call it g. So if you mathematically, if you just solve this, it's already solved for force, right, which is weight. Weight equals mass times gravity. So if you solve it for mass, you get mass equals force, which is the weight, divided by gravity. This is just a constant. It's measuring this, divides by this, and it gets your mass. That's what it is. But you take that scale to the moon and use it, the same exact thing that you weigh down here is going to have exactly the same mass on the moon, but it's only going to press down about 1/6 as hard. So it's going to give you a totally wrong value for mass, even though the mass hasn't changed, because it's assuming you're using it on Earth. That's why it's a conversion. All right, everyone understand what I'm saying on that? The difference between mass and weight? Okay, good, because mass and weight are often confused, even by scientists who should know much better. They just continue to kind of use them interchangeably when they are fundamentally different. All right, now we can talk about temperature. And you grow up kind of having a feel for what temperature is, but what is temperature? I'm not asking what are the units that you measure it in. I'm saying, what is temperature? Well, if you were to define it for a person in kindergarten, how would you put it? Or if I were to ask a kindergarten student,
how hot or cold it is?
Yeah, the temperature is how hot or cold something is. But what does that mean?
Wouldn't it be just a rate of measure for comparison purposes?
Well, a rate of what? Well, compression affects temperature, but temperature is not compression. Everything that has mass is made up of atoms, right? Everything, all massive objects are particles, are made up of particles. And those particles are continuously moving. Obviously, they're moving in a gas, right? They're always colliding with each other. Obviously, they're moving in a liquid. They're just closer together. That's the big difference between a gas and a liquid, is that the particles that make up a gas are a lot farther apart than they are in a liquid. But in a liquid, they're still banging against each other and trading places continuously, which is why liquids and gases both flow. They're both fluids. But even in a solid, when the particles no longer are trading places because they're locked into position, they're still moving. They're vibrating in place. That movement of particles is heat. Okay? Heat or thermal energy is the energy of the movement of particles. But heat and temperature are not the same thing, just like mass and weight are not the same thing. I just said that heat is movement of particles. Therefore, the more movement of particles you have, the more heat you have. Well, if you have more particles, all of which are moving, you therefore have more movement, right? And therefore more heat. This makes heat... Let me get something that's better here. This makes heat, not temperature, heat, an example of an extensive property. An extensive property is something in which it matters how much stuff you have. It's the extent matters, in other words. Whereas temperature is an example of an intensive property. The intensity matters, but the amount of stuff you have does not matter. Okay? Temperature is a measure of the average speed of the particles that make up whatever you're measuring the temperature of. Okay? So, any given sample made up of particles, all of which are moving, but they're all moving at their own speeds. And those speeds are changing because they're colliding with each other, and therefore some are slowing down, some are speeding up at any given moment. But they're all moving. And that movement is their heat. Okay? But if I just told you that the temperature is the average speed. Well, how do you compute an average? You got plenty of time today. I'm sure at least one of you knows how to compute an average. Yeah, you have to add them all up, not just the fastest and the smallest. You add them all up. So if you were able to somehow get in there and measure the speed of each individual particle and then write all those speeds down, you'd add all of those up, but that wouldn't be the average, right? That would be the sum.
Divided by the total number of.
Exactly. You'd have to then divide that sum, that total, by however many particles you counted. Right? The average of 1 and 2 is 3 divided by 2, right? 1.5. The average of 1, 2, and 3 is 1 plus 2 plus 3, which is 6, divided by 3, which is 2. So that's what temperature is. It's the average speed of the particles of the thing you're measuring. But notice when you take the average, you divide by the number of particles. In other words, you take out of the situation the extent, how much you have. It doesn't matter how much you have, right? If you take the average of 1 and 1, it's 1, right? You take the average of a million ones, it's still 1. It doesn't matter how many you how much you have, right? Well, to make this more clear what the difference is, if you consider a swimming pool, which has an unbelievably high number of water particles in it, but a hell of a lot of particles, all of which are moving, that has a certain amount of heat in it, right? Because all those particles are moving. And it also has a temperature, because you can compute the average temperature, the average speed. Well, if I take just a little jar of water out of that swimming pool, it's going to have, at least at the beginning, at least right when I take it out, it's going to have exactly the same temperature as the pool, right? But my little glass full of water has a hell of a lot fewer particles in it than the pool does. So it has much less heat than the pool, even though the temperature is exactly the same. That's the difference between an extensive property and an intensive property. Does that make sense? Okay. So that's what you're really doing when you put a thermometer into something. You're letting those particles, let's say you put it into a liquid, those liquid particles are going to be banging against the side of that thermometer bulb, which means it's going to start speeding. If you put it into something hot, hotter than the thermometer itself, then the particles of that thermometer bulb, by being bombarded by all these things, is going to speed up the particles in the bulb, making them vibrate faster, which means they're going to collide against the alcohol that's in the inside, the colored alcohol, probably red, and it's going to cause those things to expand, move up the thermometer to a higher notch on the thermometer scale, right? But if you put it into something colder than the thermometer, the thermometer bulb particles are going to actually be moving faster than the surroundings, so they're going to lose speed when they give some of their energy to the surrounding particles, and therefore it's going to cool down the alcohol and it's going to contract in the tube. But either way, you're measuring an average speed of particles. Okay, so what do we... That's the quantity. Temperature is a quantity. But what are the English units?
Fahrenheit.
Yeah, there's been, throughout history, there's been all kinds of different temperature scales, but there's really only three that still are used to any great extent. And one of those is the Fahrenheit scale, named after Fahrenheit, the, I think, German dude who came up with it. The metric system actually uses two different ones. What'd you say? Kelvin scale is also known as the absolute temperature scale. Kelvin is spelled K-E-L-V-I-N. And that's one of the two that science uses, or that metric system uses. The other one is what?
Celsius.
Right, Celsius or centigrade, which mean the same thing. Celsius is named after a person. Centigrade literally means 100 scale. Now notice that I put the little circle only between the F and or before the F and the C. So the units of Fahrenheit are the degree, are degrees, degrees Fahrenheit. The units of centigrade are degrees centigrade. But the units of the Kelvin scale, or the absolute scale, are not degrees. They're called Kelvins. So you don't put a little circle. And whatever the temperature is, you know, you say 343 kelvins. You don't say 343 degrees Kelvin. But each of these things is based on a little bit different situation. The centigrade scale is nice because it uses something very familiar to us as its basis. Water. Water actually serves as the basis for a lot of things in the metric system, but temperature is one of them. So there's two important temperatures on the centigrade scale. The temperature at which water changes from solid to liquid, in other words, melts, or from liquid to solid, in other words, freezes. The freezing point of water is defined as 0 degrees centigrade. Right? And then the boiling point of water, temperature with either liquid goes to gas or gas condenses back to liquid, is 100 degrees centigrade. So notice that this is a decimal scale. 100 is a power of 10. What are the corresponding temperatures in the Fahrenheit scale? What's the freezing point?
32 degrees.
And the boiling point?
212.
So those aren't as convenient to remember because the Fahrenheit scale is not based on water. But that's what we are familiar with. Well, notice that, you know, there's tick marks in between. The number of tick marks between 32 and 212 is 180. So the same rise in temperature, the same amount of change in temperature of water is 180 degrees in the Fahrenheit scale, whereas it's only 100 in centigrade. That means since 180 divided by 100 is simplified as 1.8, that means that there's 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit for every 1 degree centigrade. Okay, but it's also offset by 32. In other words, 32 does not equal zero is not at the same place on both of them. So you can't simply multiply or divide by 1.8 to convert between the two. You also have to take care of the fact that you have to offset this whole thing by 32 because its zero is down here. All right, anyway, those are both degrees, but the degrees are different sizes in the two systems. Kelvin is called the absolute temperature scale because it has no negatives. All right? The zeros that are on these two scales, those are just arbitrarily placed for our convenience. But it doesn't mean there can't be temperatures below that. But remember what temperature means. It's average speed. Okay? Well, if you think about it absolutely, the smallest speed you can have is zero. So on the absolute scale, zero is the bottom. You can't get any lower than that. And what that would mean is that none of the particles in your sample is moving at all. And that never actually happens, but we can get very, very close to that. Even though we don't actually reach absolute zero, we know what the value is on the other two scales. So we know what the coldest something can be is, in other words. The lowest temperature. Well, the lowest temperature on the Kelvin scale is zero. But what does that equal on the others? Negative what, though? Absolute zero on the centigrade scale equals negative 273.15 degrees centigrade. And therefore, on the Fahrenheit scale, it's negative even bigger number. I don't have that one memorized. But what that means is that on the Kelvin scale, I didn't mention this, on the Kelvin scale, the Kelvins, which are the units, are exactly the same size as the centigrade units, or the degrees Celsius. So the only difference between these the second and third scale here is where the zero is. But every notch is exactly the same size in both. Therefore, since zero kelvins equals negative 273.15 degrees centigrade, 0 degrees centigrade equals 273.15 kelvins. Right? So water freezes at 273.15 kelvins, which means when you get something cold enough for water to freeze, which we think of as being cold, there's still a lot of room for a lot more coldness. It can get ice a lot more cold than that. Another 273.15 degrees centigrade colder than that. Okay, so that's temperature and heat. Yeah, there's no limit to the top because they can get faster and faster. But there is an absolute lower limit because it doesn't make sense to say something's moving with negative speed, right? The slowest it can be is not moving. Okay, and then the last one listed here is amount of substance. Actually, I shouldn't have written it this way. Let's change amount of substance, which really kind of describes mass. Change that amount of substance to number of particles. Now, number of particles would be the quantity that we're measuring. And particles can be whatever particles you care about. It could be planets, humans, or atoms or molecules, right? But a number of particles is measured as simply a number, right? Well, the units that we use for number of particles is what? Anyone know? We measure the number of particles in moles. Spelled just like the animal. That's the unit of number of particles. And by the way, kind of silly, but this long word mole is abbreviated as MOL. Now, the reason that they can't just use M is why. M already means meters. So MOL is what they use, and MO, I guess, means month. So MOL is the abbreviation for MOLE. Not much of a savings in writing, but that's what it is. But a mole is a number of particles. Now, what is that number? We can say it's one mole, but what does one mole equal? Have you ever heard of a mole? Not the animal, the unit. A mole is a huge number. It's described by what is called Avogadro's number. But Avogadro's number has the value of 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd power, which is ridiculously enormous. Now, I wrote this in scientific notation because it's more compact to do it that way. But if I were to write this out as a regular number, what that would mean is I have 6.022. And then 20 more zeros after that. And then the decimal point. All right? So that's, what is that? That would be And therefore, if we put that in terms of millions, billions, and whatever, that would be, let's see, this is a million, a billion, a trillion, a quadrillion. That's a, what is it, a billion trillion, 602 billion trillion. So a trillion itself is unimaginably high. We have 600 billions of those trillions just in one mole. But notice that a mole is just that number. A mole is not that number of atoms. It's just that number. For instance, when I ask you what a dozen is, what is a dozen? Right, it's just 12. A dozen is just a number. It's not 12 donuts, unless you happen to be counting donuts. Or it's not 12 eggs. It could be 12 of anything. Similarly, you can have a mole of anything you're counting. Right? You can have a mole of houses, a mole of people, whatever. But since it's such a ridiculously huge number, you would never use this number to count anything so big in, because there aren't that many, and there never will be. The reason this number is so big is because it's used to count things that are unbelievably small. Atoms and molecules, in other words. Atoms and molecules are so small that it takes a ridiculously huge number of them lumped together before you even see them. Before you even see the collection of them. So if we're going to have enough atoms or molecules to actually work with as scientists, you know, where you can actually scoop some up, then you're going to have an enormous number of particles there, which means it would be inconvenient to keep writing ridiculously long numbers if you want to write down how many particles you have. And therefore, we don't count it individually, we count them in moles. This number at a time. Okay, does that make sense? Now, this brings up the periodic table again, because when you look at the periodic table, each individual type of atom, each element, which has its own symbol, has a couple numbers associated with it. Calcium, for instance, on this has this 20. Notice that every one of the red numbers is an integer. Right? There's no decimal places on any of these. So what are these numbers in red called? What are they called?
Atomic
number. Right. And notice each one has a different number, and they're all ordered in ascending order. What does the atomic number indicate?
Number of protons.
The number of protons, which is the only thing that makes that atom that kind of atom. So the thing that makes an atom, a calcium atom specifically, is that it has exactly 20 protons. That's what that number is. And the reason it's always an integer is because you don't have a half a proton in any atom. You have either a full proton or no. So you have some multiple of protons. But each atom also has a number on this periodic table above it. Sometimes it's below it. But some other number that is not an integer. It has decimal places to it. And that is the one that's called the atomic mass. Okay, the atomic mass has units of atomic mass is measured in or has units of grams per mole. Now notice what the name is. The name is atomic mass. Therefore, it's a mass. And therefore, it makes sense that it has units of grams. But it's not just grams by itself. It's grams for every mole of those types of particles. Okay? So, yeah, go ahead.
Would you say mass was fundamental?
Yeah, but atomic mass is not fundamental. Atomic mass is something that has mass in it as a measurement, but atomic mass and mass are not the same thing. Atomic mass is defined as the amount of mass that's in a mole of particles of that type. So it's atomic mass is derived. That's good eye, though. So since it's grams per mole, these atomic mass numbers that you see on any periodic table allow you to have to know the relationship between grams and moles. All right. Now, if I were to conduct an experiment in which I needed some number of particles of calcium, for instance, to use calcium again. Well, calcium atoms and any atoms are too small to get in there and actually count. But if I needed to know how many calcium atoms I had, I could do it by measuring the mass of calcium I have and using that number. Calcium has an atomic mass of 40.08 grams per mole. What that means then is if I work with pure calcium, if I carefully, using a very accurate and precise balance, if I carefully weigh out 40.0 grams of pure calcium, then that means I have 1 mole of calcium atoms. Because there's 40.08 grams in every 1 mole of calcium. Right? If I weigh out twice that amount of grams, I have 2 moles of calcium atoms, and so on. So that's the relationship. Yeah, just put them up there by the phone. Thanks a lot. Or I mean by the scale. You're a good man. Okay, so that's the relationship. Any questions on those? By the way, I don't know that there's ever been an English system counterpart to the mole. I think moles has always been metric and metric only. But I'm not sure on that. All right, now let's get into the metric system itself. Metric system, like I said, is a decimal system, meaning based on 10 and powers of 10. Decimal literally means 10 times. Mol means times, deci means 10. Why is 10 any better than any other number? There's all kinds of bases we could use. This is based on base 10, but we could use base 8 or base 16 or anything. What's nice about 10?
All you have to do is shift the decimal place and change.
That's true, but that would actually be true if you're working in another system as well. You know, I'm not going to get into the other bases because I think it's probably confusing to most people. But the reason that it's just a shift of decimal places is because we use 10 symbols. 0 through 9, there's 10 different symbols. Therefore, you run out after 10 and you have to add another place. If you only had 4 symbols, you would be doing the same thing every power of 4 instead of every power of 10. But why? What is the magic about 10? It's not magic. What's special about 10 for us as humans? Exactly. We have 10 fingers, so that's why it's natural for us to count in tens. That's why the decimal system came into existence for humans, because that's how many digits we have on our hands. If we'd grown up with 8 fingers, we would be all working in base 8, thinking it's perfectly natural, and 10 would seem weird. But anyway, that metric system is decimal. And as you see on the slide, 4, right in the middle here, you have no prefix. whereas above that you have prefixes and below it you have prefixes. The metric system is based on knowing the names of prefixes that you attach to some base unit. But all these prefixes are used regardless of what quantity you're measuring. Okay? So the first thing is you have to determine what quantity you're measuring. That's going to determine the unit you measure in, right? So if you're measuring length, for instance, which is a distance, then you're going to be using what as your unit? The meter. Well, you can measure things in meters, and that's appropriate for certain distances, right? A meter is about that big, just a hair longer than a yard. And some things it's easiest to measure right in meters. But you wouldn't want to measure the thickness of a hair in meters, right? You could, it would just be a very small number of meters. So instead, for things that are very small or very large, instead of using the base unit, you use one of these other units that have a special prefix to say what fraction or what multiple of that unit you're working in. Okay? Well, no prefix just has a multiplier of 1. Multiplying by 1 doesn't change it at all, right? Anything above that base is a bigger unit. And each step up is some power of 10 times as big. Okay? So if we want to measure something in that is so long that we want to count by 10 meters at a time, in other words, we want our unit to be 10 meters big, which I can't do with my arms, then those would be called decameters. Decameters. Or if we were measuring time, right, we could say decaseconds, tens of seconds. So the quantity determines what unit you're using, and then how big or small you want your units to be determines which prefix you're using. So there's 10 deca whatevers in one whatever. 10 decameters in 1 meter. You go up one more step to hecto, which means 100 of. A hectometer, that's 100 meters. But it's also 10 decameters, right? Because 100 is 10 tens. And so on. Another step up gets you to kilo. A kilometer or kilometer is 1,000 meters. A kilo whatever is 1,000 whatevers. Now notice, for these first three, we stepped by just 10 at a time. 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times. And that's because it's convenient to go by one decimal place step right around the base. But once you get up to kilo, we no longer give special names for individual decimal point shifts. Instead, we start shifting by 3 decimal places at a time. So we go from kilo to mega, which is going from 1,000 to 1,000,000. Notice that 1,000,000 is 1,000,000. So a mega meter is 1,000 kilometers. But mega itself means 1,000,000. So a megameter is 1,000,000 meters. Then we can go up to 1,000,000,000, giga. Right? And it goes well beyond that. But we're not going to pay attention to those prefixes. Now, at the end of these, after the parentheses, notice that you have letters. These letters are the abbreviations for the prefix. So if you write out meter, for instance, it's M-E-T-E-R. The abbreviation for that unit is just M. And if you're using meters, that's all you write is M. But if instead you're measuring in hectometers, you would write H-M. If you were measuring in hectoseconds, it would be HS, and so on. Okay, so that's what those mean. Now, below the base, all of these prefixes refer to smaller units than the base is. So a tenth of the base, so using meters again, a tenth of a meter would be a decimeter, which is abbreviated DM. Be careful with deci and deca. Deci means one-tenth of. One-tenth of something means you need 10 of those to equal that one, right? So there are 10 decimeters in 1 meter. But deca, which is abbreviated DA, not just D, means 10 of those. So whichever one is the smaller one, you're going to need more of those to have the same amount. Right? Just like you need 4 quarters to equal a dollar, because quarters are a smaller amount of money than $1 is. You need 100 pennies. By the way, they're called cents because centi means 1/100th. Right? So a centimeter, which is about that much, is 1/100th of a meter. Milli is 1/1000th of. And notice that the abbreviation for milli is M, but any of these abbreviations for the prefix is never used by itself. Right? So M by itself doesn't mean milli. M by itself means meter. But if you want to abbreviate a millimeter, you use MM. The first M for milli, the second M for meter. A millisecond, MS, and so on. And then, so just like above, we stepped one decimal point at a time on these smaller ones, but then once we get to 10 to the negative third, we start going by 3 at a time. Each change by 10 or 1/10, in other words, each shift of a decimal point is called an order of magnitude. So if you make something an order of magnitude bigger, that means it's really 10 times as big. If you make it 2 orders of magnitude bigger, what does that mean? Not 20 times.
100 times.
2 orders of magnitude is 2 shifts of the decimal place. 3 orders of magnitude is 1,000 times bigger. And so on. Okay, so when we get to 10 to the negative 3 at milli, 1/1000th, then we start going by 3 orders of magnitude in the smaller direction, just like we did for the bigger. So 1/1000th of a milli is a micro, but a micro compared to the base is 1/1000th. Micro means 1/1000000th of. And notice that micro, you would think might be abbreviated with an M, but we can't use M because M was already used for milli. So we have to use a Greek version of an M, which is a mu. This thing is not a U. It's a Greek mu, which is spelled mu. And so it has this long leading tail on it. And so that's why we would write micrometers, for instance, like this, or microseconds like that. This means 1/1000000th of a meter. This means 1/1000000th of a second. It's very short, right? Yeah.
So with those abbreviations at the end, like if you don't capitalize the M, then everyone's going to assume that you're meaning something.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, these ones that make them big are supposed to be all capitals. And they are all capitals once you get up here and above. The reason they're capitals is to remind you that they're making it bigger rather than smaller. But they didn't do it with K, because capital K already means kelvins. So those capitals were already taken. But that's why it's a mnemonic device to remind you that these are making it bigger. And these ones are small letters to remind you that it's making it smaller. But that's right. If you wrote lowercase m, lowercase m, that's not at all the same thing as uppercase M, lowercase m. This is a millimeter, which is 1/1000th of a meter, tiny. This is a megameter, which means 1,000,000 meters. Hell of a long distance, right? So those are totally different units.
Capital H.
Capital H is used for something else too. I just can't think of what it is right now, but that's why they didn't do it for that as well. Well, it is for hydrogen, but it's also, I think, used as a unit for something. Hydrogen is a chemical symbol, but it's H is a unit for something. Maybe the Henry. I'm not sure. Okay. So micro, 1,000,000th, nano, 1,000,000,000th, and then it can get much smaller than that, but we're not going to pay attention to those either. All right, the nice thing about this is once you memorize these prefixes, then it doesn't matter what quantity you're using, all of these prefixes apply to all the units for all the quantities. Right? Whereas in the English system, a cup only means volume. Right? You would never use a cup for distance or for time. All these prefixes apply to all units. Volume, by the way, is that a volume is a quantity, of course. Is it fundamental or derived? Why is it derived? For volume, it's actually three things, right? Area would be two things. So area is a derived quantity because you measure area. Area really is distance by distance, right? Length times width. Each length and width are just special names for distances. Well, volume is length times width times height, all of which are distances. So it's a combination of fundamental quantities, and therefore volume is a derived quantity. And all of the units you measured in are derived units. All right. What do we have next? Okay, dimensional analysis in slide 5. Dimensional analysis is a way of converting some value to another value. Keeping track of units as you go along. Now it's called dimensional analysis because dimensions is a word that means units. All right? And most students want to skip the step of writing units, and most of the time that ends up giving that student a completely incorrect answer. Dimensional analysis was devised as a way to make sure that you are solving a problem the way it should be solved. In other words, you're setting it up correctly. But in dimensional analysis, really what you are doing is serial multiplication, meaning multiplication one after another. Serial just means one after another, right? In math, what do we call things that are multiplied together?
Products.
No, products are the answers we get. The things that we actually multiply together are called factors. So in this example on slide 5, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 factors here. That's why it's serial multiplication. You multiply these two, then multiply it by that, and so on. But each individual fraction shown here is a factor. The first factor is simply what's given in the problem. And in this example, I'm saying how many millimeters are in 150 miles? So what's given in that question is 150 miles. Okay, that's the first factor. And that should always be. And then whenever you're doing a dimensional analysis problem, you start with the thing that you're given. And then you have so many other factors. It might just be one more factor. It might be many. Here it's these six others, though. However many there are, these other factors that you multiply the original one by are called conversion factors. Because each one individually converts between two units. Now, when I say how many millimeters are in 150 miles, there's going to be two values involved, right? The beginning value and the ending value. But it's exactly the same distance we're talking about in both cases, right? In other words, 150 miles equals however many millimeters. The distance hasn't changed. We're just measuring it two different ways. Well, when you multiply something, well, let me start that over. Therefore, since we're really talking about the same distance before and after, I really need to have the same value on both sides of the equal sign. Otherwise, it's not equals, right? But since multiplication is involved, mathematically speaking, it can only be true that what I'm multiplying something by is equal to the answer if what am I multiplying by? What is the only thing that you can be sure when you multiply by something, it's going to give you the same answer? One. Exactly. So mathematically speaking, conversion factors, which is all of these six, not this one, but all of these ones individually, if you look at each one individually, each one really equals one. Because the numerator, the top part, is equal to the bottom part. If you have 8 over 8 as a fraction, that equals 1, right? And when the top and the bottom are the same, really that fraction equals 1. And if you can multiply by 1 as many times as you want, you're not going to change the overall value. So that's really what's happening here. I have an original distance, and I'm multiplying by a bunch of different ways of saying 1. And I end up, therefore, with the same exact distance, just expressed in different units. 1,760 yards per mile. That's one conversion factor. But 1,760 yards equals 1 mile. Therefore, this thing equals one. And so on. Everyone with me on that? Are you? Well, that's a good question. There's not just one way to do any dimensional analysis problem. There's multiple different ways you can do it. But if you use the right procedure, it doesn't matter which path you take, you're going to end up with the same answer. Okay? So, this one you already can see from home, since you have the slide. Let me do another one just like it. If I say, I need to invest in some of these. That one's probably good. Yeah. If I say 73.6 gigameters equals how many inches? That means I'm given this distance and I need to figure out what question mark is, right? So I can use dimensional analysis to find out, and I always start a dimensional analysis problem the same way, by putting down the first thing that I have given from the question, which is 73.6 gigameters, right? Now I can keep it just like that, but since all the other things are fractions, I just like to have everything be a fraction, and you can make anything a fraction just by simply putting it over one. That's why I do that for the first thing. Okay? Notice it's not one with a unit, it's just one. Now, in my question, what my goal is inches. So that means gigameters better not be in the answer. Dimensional analysis is used to make sure that I therefore eliminate gigameters. So I'm not going to worry about any numbers yet. What I care about right now is getting rid of gigameters as units. And the way I can do that is by, since they're in the top right now, I'm going to put them in the bottom in this next conversion factor, or in this next factor. Just like that one, yeah. So, almost without thinking, I just make myself a new fraction and I put whatever units are here down here so that they will cancel. Now, this is a conversion factor, so for whatever I have on the bottom needs to equal whatever I put on the top. So I can go from gigameters to anything I want, as long as I know the conversion factor for it. Well, if you know the metric system, which you should know the prefixes for, then you can go from this to the base, which would be just meters. Okay? Now, giga meant what? 1 billion of those. In any conversion factor, the same fraction, there's going to be one that is bigger than the other. Either the top is bigger than the bottom or the bottom is bigger than the top. But which, since they have to equal each other, that means whichever one is smaller, you're going to need more of those, right? Well, here, which one is smaller? Meter, much smaller than a gigameter. Since giga means a billion, a gigameter is a billion meters. Therefore, just one gigameter equals a billion meters. The smaller one always gets the bigger number within a conversion factor. Okay? Now, if I were to stop there, I would have accomplished getting rid of the gigameters. But my answer would now be in the only units that are left, which is meters. That's still not acceptable for the question. So I have to just do exactly the same thing and almost unthinkingly eliminate meters by putting it down here. Now notice that my answer is in inches, which is English system. So I need some way, using a conversion factor, to get from the metric system to the English system. And I do that, there's multiple conversions, but the only one that I have memorized and one that is exact is a conversion between centimeters and inches. So to get to centimeters, I have to convert from meters where I am right now to centimeters. But that's a snap because that's just within the metric system, right? Centi means what? 1/100th. And therefore, it's a smaller thing than a meter. So there's more of those. It takes 100 centimeters just to equal 1 meter. Right? Okay, now I've eliminated my meters. But centimeters can't be in the answer either, so I'm going to eliminate those. And the whole reason that I went to centimeters, like I said, is because I know the conversion between centimeters and inches. So now I'm going to do that. And there are exactly 2.54 centimeters in 1 inch, which is worth memorizing. Okay? Centimeters cancel, and now the only unit that I have left is inches, which is what I was asking for. So we're done. And that's why you should always write the units out, because that'll prove to yourself that you've set this up correctly. Now let's just say I had instead asked for how many feet. Well, I would do it exactly the same way, except now I need to get rid of inches and go to feet. There's 12 inches in a foot. Right? Or I could have done yards or miles or whatever. Now, once you're to this place and you know that everything cancels except what your answer should be in, it's just a matter of putting it into your calculator. And since this is all multiplication and division, it doesn't matter at all what order you do this in. But I recommend when you use a calculator, to hit equals only once at the very end. So as long as you're entering times for all the top numbers and divided by for all the bottom numbers, You could do it this divided by this times this divided by this divided by this divided by this times this and so on. It would always be okay. Of course, it makes most sense just to go left to right on the top, hitting multiply each time, left to right on the bottom, hitting divided by each time, and then hit equals once. That'll save you some problems you can get into if you hit equals prematurely. Of course, you don't have to enter the ones because they don't make any difference. So it's simply 73.6 times a billion times 100 divided by 2.54 divided by 12 equals. Now, does anyone have a calculator to do that?
Yeah.
Did you get the answer?
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
2.89 times 10 to the 12th
is almost the answer. What's the answer? What's missing?
Inches.
No, it's actually feet, because we did this last bit. I changed it to feet.
Oh, I haven't gotten feet yet, so that's an inch.
Okay, so let's just erase this. Yeah, and inches, the unit, is what was missing. Your answer should have a magnitude, which is the number part, and a unit. Okay, so 2.89 times 10 to the 12th inches. That's an enormous amount of inches, right? 10 to the 12th is a trillion. So 2.89 trillion inches. A shitload. So the next step in the procedure is to ask yourself whether that makes any sense. Because even if you think you've set it up correctly because all your units cancel, you might have written something down incorrectly. So you ask, you just do a spot check and say, does this make any sense? Well, you started off with 3/4 of 100 gigameters. A gigameter is a damn long distance. So it would make sense that if you measure that same distance just in these tiny inches, that you'd have a hell of a lot of them. So yeah, it does make sense. Okay? If we'd gone from 76 inches to gigameters, 76 inches would equal very, very small fraction of 1 gigameter, right? So you'd expect that to pop out. But it would if you set it up correctly. All right, any questions on that? You think you can do this? Well, I recommend convincing yourself that you can do this. I think I even have some practice problems on my website under one of the main pages in the menu. I can't remember what the link is called. By the way, this sixth slide shows you the three holdouts: United States, Liberia, Myanmar. Anyone know why Liberia is called Liberia? Right? And it's called that because Liberia was founded by freed American slaves. And so they have a flag that's very similar to the United States. Pretty cool history, actually. All right, that's the lecture. I assume you want to take a 5-minute break before we count bacteria. Okay.